Anne-Marie Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Timmery, you're a millennial, and it appears that your cohorts are not having as many children. Is that true?
It is definitely true. We're not only not having children, we're not getting married.
And, you know, that goes together, doesn't it? We've been taught as a society that kids and marriage are something that if you go that route at all, should be way down the line.
And the thing that you said is if you go that way.
Because it's the percentages are dropping, right. So that less than half, I would think. And they're not having kids. Provocative article at therooster.com, and this is one of those articles, it's like those shows we talk about and we say don't watch them.
It's a great article, but man, the author's offensive.
It's offensive. There's cuss words but
you know, it's, I appreciate her honesty at the same time. I think that this is telling of the millennial generation. They have been studied and known as the most marketed generation ever. They have seen the biggest amount of change truly in their upbringing in terms of technology, that now they're just looking for authenticity. And so a lot of the time, unfortunately, their language can be pretty crass. And I think that's also from not having parents around to regulate language as well.
That's true. Authenticity, though, just as a little side note, what does that even mean? Because a lot of times I hear authenticity and what I see is just conformity. Like, I just see them being cool. Everybody else cusses, and so I cuss too. Is that, I mean, am I wrong, or do many millennials equate authenticity with actually being a part of the crowd?
I think in this case, a lot of cases, the anger is being communicated, that I'm just unhappy, and you're actually seeing in my crassness sometimes I'm unhappy. Now, at the same time, I think there's a difference of they're cussing, so I will too to sound cool.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And so the article is 9 brutally real reasons why millennials refuse to have kids. And she actually starts out with some of the stats. So just in the last 5 years, birth rates have declined among women in their 20s 15%. That's huge. The number of childless couples has doubled since 1970, with only, like I said, only about half of women ages 15 to 44 having babies. That's some drastic reductions in the amount of women having children. But the reasons are somewhat enlightening, and they do speak to, I think, your notion that a lot of millennials are just kind of angry.
Yeah, they're angry. And I think that even as we walk through these 9 reasons, they make sense. And I have to tell you, a lot of them I've heard even from really solid, good, astute people who want to get married but have this fear of a marriage and family life. And I think that leads us to the first one. It talks about how the world basically kind of sucks right now, and do we necessarily want to raise children in the atmosphere that we currently see, both from, you know, threats of war that some people are seeing, really the lack of morality in general, the breakdown of marriage. Is this something we want kids to have to face?
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate question. And even beyond the wars and the terrorism and the bullying and the identity theft and all the things that there are listed here, you know, the politics that we don't like or whatever, isn't part of this just a very deep unhappiness with our own lives? Right. As well, this is what we talked about. I think we can't underestimate that millennials have been given a pretty rough go of it.
But I also think that millennials can be very pessimistic, altruistic, but pessimistic. So they like to give, be involved in philanthropy, working, reaching out. But at the same time, I think they can be so pessimistic that, man, things are just horrible. And even just some of the bumper stickers during the last election were so negative. And I remember people were laughing at them, but I'm thinking, I don't think that it's that bad. And even now, all of the sexual immorality, the pornography, everything, the culture and the people you interact with, we still have the ability for a lot of good around us.
How much of that, though, Timory, is your deep-seated conviction that God is in control and that ultimately he wins?
Well, I think that's fundamental.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is, right? And if there wasn't that rock-solid foundation there, that there's a God in heaven and there is a battle going on, and even in the midst of the darkest times, I know that eventually this all rights itself and God wins and justice prevails. Without that, I would have a hard time trying to find hope. I'd have a hard time looking and seeing, oh, you know, the world is great. I mean, I have a hard enough time as it is, and I've got that hope, right? Like, yeah. I've seen God work. I know that he's in control. Yet at the same time, all the stuff around us, I mean, it sort of makes sense of the rates of depression and
suicide
and all these things. Not only, you know, we can look at things like broken families and all that, but just a lack of hope due to a lack of religious belief, which is declining drastically as well.
Drastically. I mean, even just some of the numbers recently that we were looking at, you continue to see growth in the population of the nuns who identify with no religion whatsoever. And many people who have left the Catholic faith. I'm astonished over and over again to see in my Pilates training, you know, working one-on-one with people through, you know, extreme injuries in the body. You know, I have a lot of time to talk just with one person at a time, whether it's a shoulder injury, whether they have, you know, discs that are bulging, whatever it is. And Dawn, so many of them are fallen away Catholics. Almost every single one of my clients is a fallen away Catholic.
Wow.
And it's shocking to me. And I'm reminded, you know, California has predominantly been Catholic and it's a very Catholic state. But to see that so many people have left the faith, and often for no reason, too.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't done a good job as Catholics of keeping
Absolutely.
Them there. So the second reason is interesting. We're poor. We just don't have the money for kids.
And I'm a millennial. I get this one.
A couple of numbers they throw out. When a kid leaves your body, it costs about $20,000 to $30,000, they figure. I don't know about that. And I've got, one person says, $52,000 in student loans to look forward to. I can't bring a baby up with all these student loans and with all the expense. And this, I kind of get this one
as
well.
I can speak to this one. I've actually, it's not something I share often, but I'm actually, my boyfriend and I have not gotten married yet. We've been together for a while because of student loans and having a strong responsibility with being able to afford housing, loans, and everything, and not even extravagance, but simplicity, right? And be able to hold to that student loan payment. I mean, realistically, most people are paying about $1,000 a month on their student loan.
Yeah, it's huge. I'm still paying off student loans from decades ago. Yeah, it's a tough thing. It's another indication, though, that the economy and our mindset is set up to be anti-child, actually. Right. To tell kids that you need to go and get the $100,000 or whatever in student loans before you can start having children is essentially to say you're not going to start having children, or that children are not something you should focus on. It's all about the career. And again, it doesn't mean that, I mean, here I'm talking to a woman who's got the master's degree. And I mean, we're not anti that.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying that the system and the mindset is set up so that having children, even if you wanted them, is much, much more difficult.
That's actually a crisis. We're at the point where student loan debt has become such an issue. It is delaying people in living their lives, but not just their lives, their vocations as husbands, wives, parents. And so I think that this is something where we have a responsibility to talk to the generations that are coming up now, before they leave high school, as they're looking to enter into college, talking about the reality, especially for women, if you want to be home with your child at all and you have a high level of student loan debt, that's hard because the pressure to have a second income to cover that student loan debt prevents many women. I have friends in this case who can't be home with their children, unfortunately.
No, that's absolutely true. And so... maybe we should be more open to a message that says it's okay to have the kid earlier on. And again, it's tough, though, especially like I said, the economy itself, like California itself is set up so that you can't really live on one income, right? Like,
right.
You can't really do it. And so, again, we've had so many bad results from the sexual revolution. I'm going to skim over number three because it's kind of the same. Traffic and high rents make life miserable for people that already exist. The overpopulation, I guess we could talk about the overpopulation thing, which is a complete scam, which is complete nonsense. Anybody who says they're not having kids because of overpopulation just either doesn't know the facts or they're lying to you. Population is going down around the world in all Western civilizations,
right.
Particularly at least. And listen, we could put the whole world in Florida, a small
right.
part of Florida.
We okay. just talked about this a couple weeks ago too, and some of the different European places that have seen such a decline. But here's the deal too. There has been, I think, such clarity from so many of our demographers when we talk about overpopulation, specifically in the West. The overpopulation is within the baby boomer and up generations. We're actually underpopulated in the lower generations.
Yeah.
There aren't going to be enough people to care for the baby boomers as they continue to retire, and they've just started to.
we're actually on the precipice of a demographic implosion.
Right,
like it's going to go down. We've seen it in Japan. We're seeing it in many European countries. They're only at even a sustainable rate because of immigration, and so no, the overpopulation thing. Don't even acknowledge it.
And you know what? I can post some videos if you're interested. I'll make a note right now. I'll tweet out some really good videos of overpopulation that comes from well-studied demographers.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Is pregnancy not to be pursued because it doesn't make you look good? That's what millennials say, according to this article from a site that shall remain unnamed because we actually don't want you going there. But some very blunt and I think honest reasons why millennials say they are not having kids. Number four, we did the last three before the break. Number four is pregnancy is not hot.
You know, this was a really interesting one, and it takes me back to our show a couple weeks ago where we covered that on a television live announcement of the Paradise, the Bachelor Paradise
the Bachelor
couple,
where they did the ultrasound, right?
A lot of people, a lot of the response was talking about, well, wow, why would I want to see another thing inside of you? And that's disgusting. And they saw a beautiful ultrasound. I don't know how that's gross or no guts, blood. I mean, it's black and white and a baby's outline. But here again, people are talking about how I feel lightheaded and nauseated. I just can't. It's not for me. I don't want the, I'd rather do a tube baby. They talk about having your intestines falling out. And like, they just get so grotesque and talk about this violation of the body that I wonder where that stems from.
Well, I think it's, this is a similar thing to the pro-choice argument, where you're simply focused on the woman and there is no acknowledgement of the baby.
Right.
Now, I have been there for five deliveries. We have four kids and one in heaven waiting for us when we get there. And let me assure you, I'm not a guy who enjoys the doctor. I'm not a blood and guts guy. I there's some physical things about delivering babies. I wouldn't do it as a job. Let's just say that. But here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, when you hold the baby, that's so forgotten, right? I mean, we've had good deliveries, we've had bad. You know what? It all is forgotten when you hold the baby, because it's about the baby, for Pete's sake. What's wrong with you? It's not about how, and frankly, I think that, you know, the glow that pregnant women have, and I mean, it's beautiful.
It's
pregnant women are beautiful. This is nonsense. I'm sorry.
Well, and the woman's body is built to be able to handle the natural process of having a child. Yes, there are defects and things that happen, but the woman's body's built for having children. I'm not saying that's what you're reduced to, but that's what it's made for. Don't get my words wrong.
Well, and it's not a reduction, right?
Yes.
It's a benefit. Like, you have the gift. That's what makes you so much better than me as a man. Like, you get to have babies. And I get it. I know women who just, I'm like, we don't want to have. Okay, right. I get it. I understand. But at the same time, this is not an argument, frankly, for not this one. You know, we talk about millennials being selfish and are all these reasons selfish. And
I think this is
this one borderline. You're too focused on yourself.
Well, I think that this is one that is created when you have a contraceptive culture and abortion, because then you would go, well, I don't want to change my body because I'm so used to being in control and preventing pregnancy that pregnancy now to many people seems unnatural and to them at times immoral in a sense because they think I did the responsible thing.
This is a really important point that the notion of having a kid is unnatural.
Yes.
Is sort of a foundational presupposition of much of this. And indeed, we have made it more and more unnatural. So now we spend a lot of our youth using technological means, ingesting hormones that are man-made and, you know, pharmaceutical stuff and doing all, putting objects in our bodies so that we don't have a kid, right? And so we do a lot of unnatural things to keep from having children. And then later on down the road, when we have passed the natural childbearing age and now we decide we want a kid, we are doing all of this technological stuff now to in order to achieve having a child. And the whole thing, we have twisted it so that the whole process now is not natural,
right?
We have taken all this mechanical, non-biological, non-organic means. And really, we do have this view now that, oh, well, yeah, childbearing, I mean, it's like this weird thing that happens somewhere. No, right? I mean, but you're right. It starts with that contraceptive mindset.
Well, and it's funny you say that, Dom, because I was at the safari park in San Diego, and we're observing the habitat going along on the safari, and they keep talking on and on about the reproduction of the animals and how natural and wonderful it is and how certain female animals don't ovulate if the male animal's not there. And I'm thinking, yes, now think about people too. And when we hinder that process, just like when you hinder the process for the cheetahs and the other animals, something goes wrong. Can you acknowledge that?
So I was there. I have a little story about the animal park as well. I was there not that long ago. And the gorilla enclosure, you know, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
They have all this gorilla family.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, there was the big alpha male sitting there. And there was a smaller female gorilla beside him. And this other gorilla sort of like came, but he got protected by the alpha male.
Oh.
And the woman who was there to describe everything, she was explaining to me that that was actually his grandmother. And he was protecting his grandmother from this young male who was, it was very familial, you know,
yes.
And it was also very gender specific. Like, this alpha male has a particular job to do in this gorilla family.
Right.
And I thought, wow, the way you speak about this gorilla family, you actually couldn't say that about a human family or you'd be called sexist.
Right.
You couldn't talk about the male doing his role in the family, protecting the grandmother and the wife and doing the kids. There was a little baby gorilla. And you're right, Timmy, but like, with the way we speak about the animal kingdom, the naturalness of it, the way things work, we have completely disassociated that
completely.
From talking about human families.
And it was so funny because I'm sitting there at the safari park and they're talking about the cheetahs and the short time frame for them to be able to have baby cheetahs. And I mean, one animal after another the whole day. And I think I was with my little sister and I go, I'm sorry, Jacqueline. I know I keep comparing this to humans, but these people have to understand the beauty of nature of the animal. We, more so the rational animals, made in God's image and likeness. And even if you aren't a person of faith and you don't see that, you have to naturally be able to observe through your senses the difference between animals and people.
Well, or at least take those principles. I mean, it's sort of ironic, isn't it, that the same people who have told us for years and years that we are just another animal and that we should follow our natural instincts, and they lied to us about the sexual escapades of, you know, Samoans and all the rest of it, and we were lied to about what it means to be natural. But now, they don't want us as human animals to be natural. Now we have to do everything artificially. Now everything's mechanical. Now we have to take control of our nature and become something other than what we naturally are. So it's interesting, a little bit of irony there.
Right. And I think that it's so important to see and be aware of as we move forward that there is this nature ingrained in all of the created world. And that's why the church has also spoken more and more so about respecting the natural world, because it tells us something not of the ecology of the planet, but of the ecology of the human person. And that comes first.
Yeah, I think you'll find, if you study this topic, that the Catholic Church is the biggest, greatest, and most deep defender of the natural world. And I mean that somewhat specifically, but the whole notion that things have a nature and that we should allow nature to do what nature does is a very traditional Catholic notion. Right. It is a modern conception that we should be anti-nature or that things don't have a nature. That is not Catholic. And if you are a person like
human,
Timory and myself, who think that natural is better, and so we try to eat healthy and we try to not put, you know, foreign stuff into our bodies as much as possible, you know, and you try, you know, live organically and all the rest of that. If that's you, and I know there's a lot of you out there, you know, millennials included, you need to think about how far you take that.
Right.
Do you take it only as far as your contraceptives you're using, or
food?
Yeah, the food you eat,
your
or what?
Skin products. Like, you've got to see that things work in a certain way.
Yeah, and so I would say take it to its ultimate end.
Well, and this is where it comes down to. I keep thinking about the senses. Do we believe there's taste, touch, feel, like sight, all these different senses? We observe through those senses to come to understand ourselves and others. But I think we're living in a time that is so caught up with our devices that we're no longer observing. I think we talked about this a while back. Even some of the African primitive cultures, they've done these studies showing on what spectrum they're able to observe color and what they're able to see. That culture versus westernized culture that is so entrenched in technology can't even perceive the same spectrum of colors, because we're just not used to them in that depth and clarity.
Well, and I think many of the ideas that we are told we are supposed to accept these days actually require us to deny our senses. I mean, I'm thinking of the whole, I mean, the most obvious one is the gender ideology, that you're supposed to look at two bodies and say, nope, no difference there. Right? You're supposed to be able to, I mean, okay, especially with all the nudity in our culture right now, with all the nudity, we're supposed to look at two different bodies.
Let's just take a comparison. Maybe pick two people you know and compare them in your mind.
Just
figure it out.
Yeah, you don't need to go look online on it. But we're supposed to accept the notion that there's no difference until you decide, right? It is it's a very anti-nature, anti-realism, anti-senses ideology. It's really putting your brain and your senses in your back pocket, denying all of that, and just accepting on blind, irrational faith a bunch of lies that people have told you, frankly, to make themselves some money, if I'm going to be honest about it. I mean, I think we need to realize just how many lies we're fed on a daily basis that benefit other people. And that we think, oh yeah, I just need to accept that to be... No, you don't need to accept that.
This is Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So another one of the topics on these nine reasons millennials refuse to have kids, and I think there's a lot of legitimacy to some of them. Some of them you could see as just selfish, and even the author herself recognizes some people look at millennials viewing them as just selfish for not having kids. But I think that there's a desire, Don, to kind of move towards a sense of morality when they're seeing, you know, the cost of living's kind of hard. They're seeing elements such as, you know, it's just not easy to have kids. But I think the next one, number five, that comes up is because these days people have kids for selfish reasons. This kind of touches on the designer baby attitude that we see and the harm through IVF and the abortions that result from it. But what they're seeing is that people just want kids for themselves. It's their desire.
Yeah, they want kids, according to these questioners, they want kids to be their own personal experiments,
right?
Sort of like to make a little mini me or to see what I can do, or just like a handbag, or maybe we've moved, you know, beyond the Chihuahua and now we're actually going to have a human baby.
This You're
sort
talking
of thing.
About my Chihuahua comments from
I
the last
get it.
Show.
I mean, this is true. And unfortunately, there are parents that have babies for selfish reasons. But I mean, really, is that a reason not to have kids, though? I mean, just because somebody else does it for wrong reasons doesn't mean you have to do it for a wrong reason. I don't quite get that.
And I also think while people can have kids for selfish reasons, two things can happen. One, you can be hit with a real reality check or the responsibility of having a child. But two, you also do have parents who are just putting the kids in daycare, taking off, and they refer to them, well, my kids, like they refer to them as a commodity, as something to show off, and not necessarily as human beings they're forming and raising to be good people, but more so it's about them, their kids, and what they show off and seem like.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because traditionally, marriage and children have the effect of maturing people and making them less selfish. It's a love factory, is essentially what marriage and child raising is, if it's done with the right attitude. So, hey, nobody's perfectly mature, I mean, ever, but especially, you know, you're young and you have some kids and you just got married. Okay, you don't have everything all together. You're not a perfectly mature person. But you know what happens as you serve your wife or your husband and your kids? You become less selfish and you become more mature. You become a better loving person. That's traditionally how it's worked. One of the reasons that people have kids for selfish reasons now, or that kids don't have that maturing effect on them, frankly, is that they're having them way too late. Mm-hmm. Like by the time you're 40 and your selfish things are entrenched. I don't mean any offense by this, but people who are single, and I know many of them who are like 40 or 45 or 50, and there's a lot of them. I get it. They do not have the same outlook towards life as those who have a whole herd of kids.
There's a different
maturity. It's not really their fault, and I wouldn't even call it maturity, but it's just you have an outlook towards life that when you wake up, you don't have to think about the desires and wants of seven other people. Okay, I mean, and again, this is not to say that you're selfish for doing that. If you live by yourself and you have been for the last 30 years or whatever, you're going to have a routine. You're going to do your certain. I mean, that's how it is. It's not bad. That's just how it is. By its nature, when you wake up and you've got a wife and you've got four kids or whatever, you've got to sort of figure out, okay, how's my day going to work considering the needs and wants of everybody else? Yeah. And so when you're 40, let's say, and you've been doing that for a lot of years, and again, I don't mean to sound judgmental. This is just matter of fact kind of stuff. And suddenly a kid gets thrown in there. Yeah, that's a big change, and you sort of get entrenched in how you've lived. And so, I mean, I just think of, let's just say the people that I know.
Yeah.
It's not as easy for them to, like, take my kids and spend a day with them.
That's a crisis. Well, even a lot of people with only one child,
right.
Or children that are in daycare and they're not used to taking care of them.
Right.
The idea of being alone with their children, it's panic mode.
Right.
Versus I come from a family of four kids. I don't ever remember my parents not being, one of my parents either, or not being able to handle us, even with a super active little boy or three loud, obnoxious little girls, you know?
Yeah, it's just a different mindset. That's all. So it's just sort of a sociological observation on my part that the designer baby thing is going to be more prevalent and babies are going to be tougher. The longer
you
live without, having it.
So. Absolutely. Well, that takes us to our next couple. The number six is, we'll ruin them up with terrible parenting. And I think, Don, this shows people are so scared. They've come from such broken homes. We see just a horrible lack of parenting in general. People are preoccupied with their careers and don't really have a focus of children. That they recognize these kids aren't really going to be raised well.
Yeah, and part of it is that they see children. I'm looking at some of these comments here. So Ryan 29, for example, says, "Children have always irritated me to no end." When they stare at you on the plane or whatever. And I just think, okay, yes, you might be a terrible parent because you're selfish. But again, that's showing a mindset where you don't really understand what parenthood is all about and what love is all about. And I think you're right. I mean, they haven't experienced it. That's why they don't. But at the same time, I mean, what are you viewing parenthood as?
Well, you choose to be a bad parent because you were talking a little bit earlier in the show about having a child and holding that baby and how you forget the trauma of the birth and the pregnancy and how there's all of a sudden this love and responsibility for the child. Well, that changes you. When you suddenly have another person before you, even men who get married talk about this all the time.
All the time.
When I made the mindset that I wanted to marry this person, or when I actually married them, my outlook on life changed. Same with a child.
Yeah, even thinking about having a child changes a person. And so I just wanted to do this thought experiment. If you're a person who has contraceptive sex, for example, married or unmarried, but just think about that. And then think about having uncontraceptive sex. What's the difference? That child, right? That possibility of a child. And I suspect, if you think honestly about that, that the notion of having uncontraceptive sex makes you either scared that you're going to do it, or you think, oh, wow, that would be a big responsibility. Like, who would I want to have sex with if it's going to be unconscious? It would have to be someone that I'm willing to raise a kid with. And I'd have to be a person who's able to raise a kid. And I just think even thinking about that makes a person more, potentially at least, more mature.
Right. And more responsible.
More responsible.
Who you're sleeping with,
yep.
Who you're committing with. Like, that changes your whole outlook.
Yep. And so, yeah, this notion that, well, you know, I wouldn't be a good... I think that's a bit of a smokescreen if faced with a kid or the possibility. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I'd be a bad parent if that's never a possibility. But if I put it before you that you're never going to have sex again for the rest of your life unless there's a possibility that you're going to be a parent.
Right.
Think about that for a second and think if, oh, could you? Would it be possible for you to grow up? Because these kids are basically saying, I'm not interested in growing up. Kids would force me to grow up, and I'm not interested in that, and I don't need to be interested in that. And so mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem.
Well, I think that takes us, as you continue to look, this whole mindset, all these different reasons for not wanting to have a child, they all kind of intertwine around one another. So next one is, we want careers, so sue us. Because that's the focus. A lot of people want careers. They don't want kids. Simple. They've gone to school for it. They've worked for it. Why would we want to have children now?
Yeah. And this is another one of those lies that people have been sold for about 70 years now. And you look at the history of this, and you know I'm knee deep. If you've been listening to the show at all, you know I'm knee deep in making this documentary about the history of the sexual revolution. This was a very explicit teaching of people like Betty Friedan. Mm-hmm. So Betty Friedan is a bored 40-something upper-middle-class homemaker in upstate New York, and she had what she called the problem that doesn't have a name. And that was that, hey, I want to go work. Her kids had been gone, and she's basically mm-hmm. home bored. Mm-hmm. And she decided to make an ideology out of that. And so she surveyed a few of her other friends in her little suburb there, whatever it was. And yeah, oh yeah, we're kind of bored too. And so she wrote The Feminine Mystique saying, as a woman, I need money and power and sex to be happy.
Right.
And to do that, I need a career. And so all women, in order to be happy, must have that career. And that was what The Feminine Mystique was all about. Like, you're not going to be happy unless you have that career. Now, had no woman in the history of civilization ever been happy until that time in the 1950s with Betty? I think probably some had. And I think some had found joy in raising children. Am I saying, let me put out the quick caveat. Of course, I am not saying that women should not have careers. My wife works. You are a woman who has a career. Yeah. That's not what we're saying. What I am saying is the ideology that says women are being dragged down by family and children, and that they're not going to be happy that way, and that the only way to be happy is to get the money and the power that comes with a career, that is a lie. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's what young women have been sold. Again, you can have women's equality by saying, listen, if you're qualified and have, you should have access to that job. You should not get fired for being pregnant or whatever. I get it, right? And that was, there was some legitimate problems back then. I get it.
And there still can be at times.
Absolutely.
I have seen this. Yeah. I have dear friends who have faced these challenges.
Absolutely. But you cannot buy into the notion that if I want to be a mother, I'm not going to be happy. If I want to stay at home, I'm not going to be happy. I must have the career. There's a lot of young ladies out there who have been told that unless they get the career, they're not going to be happy. That is false. Mm-hmm. And that because the career must come first, that the child then is a roadblock. Like the child is actually a hindrance. That's why we needed contraception.
Right. And I think that, too, Don, there are so many people, you have your whole life to work. You have people in their 30s having early midlife crises because they wish they had children. They are finding themselves alone. They're finding that, well, the paths were cleared for me to be free and make whatever decision I wanted. And for that, it's really meant we choose to go to school, be educated, and work. But then they realize, I really can't have it all.
You can't.
I can't both work and have children necessarily. There's a balance. And I mean, even for me, that's something I've had to plan for.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So we've been talking, Timmery, about reasons that millennials don't want kids. Number 7 was, we want careers, so sue us. And again, I'm a person who supports a woman who wants to have a career. I'm married to a career woman. I do a radio show with a career woman. I get it. It's not, we should not be hindering women from having careers. Here's the problem. And Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse was very good on this. And I have a video clip that I'll hopefully be releasing soon.
Awesome.
On this very topic. Because she says, listen, it's fine for women to want careers. However, what we have done in this culture is try to fit them into a economy that is set up for men. So it's set up so, hey, you go get your degree right when you're out of high school and you get your career and you make money as fast as possible. And she's like, when women wanted to enter the workforce, rather than switch the economy and education system around to fit women, rather than do that, we changed women. We literally, physically changed women.
Altered our bodies.
Altered our bodies to fit into a system that is made for men.
Right.
For women, your optimal childbearing years are your late teens, 20s, early 30s. That's
right.
However, in our system, that you got to spend all of that time trying to get your degree, start your career, get advanced in your career. And so you have a lot of women, late 30s, early 40s
10
now.
10 years into their career, pretty typical. They're tired,
yep.
Need a change. And
now
they
want
can't
kids.
Have children.
And now they can't. And so it's been a deal where we have forced women to literally alter their bodies, mm-hmm. to give up their fertility, a natural part of who they are, so that they can be like men. It's an anti-woman
right.
system.
What I want to say to everyone, please, I actually have been begging any married couple, newly married or considering marriage, especially women, but this is for men and women. Dr. Roback Morse's book, Love and Economics, is one of the best books I have read because it addresses this issue with such clarity and truth. And I think truly objectively looking at the psychology, the impact on the child, the woman, and she makes the joke too over and over again. I'm sure she probably did this in her interview with you. I plan to have my baby. I got tenure. I wanted to then go ahead and work. I was going to get pregnant, have my baby in the summer, and go back to work. Guess what? It didn't work that way.
Yeah. Now, they ended up adopting, and this really started opening her eyes to some of the effects of the sexual revolution. Dr. Morse obviously is a professional woman with advanced degrees, and she did the whole career path and then realized, oh, wait, has this been a great deal for women and for kids?
Right.
It's women and children that get the raw deal in all of this. Children are seen as an afterthought, as a roadblock. Their silence. You never focus on the children in this whole picture. All the effects of the sexual revolution. The children are either they're not seen at all, or they're seen as a detriment, as a roadblock.
Let's take this from a different perspective, because I think the "we want careers, so sue us" comes just from the woman's perspective a lot of the time. But even in some of the comments, because this article really pulls from men as well, you know. Men actually have something to say, and this is something I think within marriages men struggle with, of balancing out and recognizing that need to have more responsibility for the child as well.
Now, so there's an interesting little anecdote or fact in Mark Rugnaris' new book, Cheap Sex. And I, again, check this book out. It's straight sociology. This is not a religious text. This is just sociological facts. He's at the University of Texas. And one of the points he makes is that I'm going to try to do this gently, but as far as roles within a relationship, okay, do men who take on some of the more traditional feminine roles in a relationship, do they end up having a better sexual relationship? Do women want that more? And it's interesting, you look at the facts, actually, women are less attracted to that if you just count, like, who's actually having sex in the culture. I'm going to be as blunt as possible. Who's actually
attractive to women?
Who's actually having the most sex? Who are women most attracted to? It is men in traditional male roles.
Yeah,
who are
hunter gatherers at the core, but
providing.
They're providing for the family. They're caring. They're protecting. Just like we were talking about the safari park and the gorillas earlier.
Exactly.
There's this sense of love and responsibility that plays out differently in how women are called to live love and responsibility, and different in how men live that. And there's nothing wrong with saying it. Even the way our bodies are built point to this.
Clearly. Very clearly.
Again,
no, it's true.
Compare the two next to each other.
Yeah, just your natural rhythms, like who you are, right?
Yeah.
Be who you are. That's what we're calling you as Catholics. Like, be who you are, the best version of who you are as a man, as a woman. That is the key to flourishing, to happiness, to great sex, right? All of those things go together.
And even if you're struggling along that path, you feel like you're not enough, surround yourself with people who are going to challenge you. You know, I always love The Art of Manliness. Yeah, I listen to the podcast. Do you ever listen to it?
I have not.
Okay, I totally listen to the podcast sometimes. But one of the things that is commonly advocated for is, men, please, I'm begging you, listen to this, is for men to have other male friendships, be close to them, but people that are in and out of their own home, so that they see the dynamic between that man and his wife, that man and his children. That way the buddy can call him out. Hey, your kid was reaching out to you about this, and the way you responded, or, hey, what's going on in your marriage? Like, not obtrusive, but caring, and kind of opening that ability to grow and work together. And I think that's where all of us need that encouragement, where we feel like we're not enough. Find people who are doing what you want to be and surround yourself.
Yeah, great. Great idea. All right, number 8 in the 10 reasons millennials are not having kids, because they're not going to fix anything. Says people have kids because they're bored, because their marriages have gone stale, or they think it will award them some sort of arbitrary social status. But kids aren't Band-Aids. Now, they go on to say their life sucks, who demand your complete attention. Just when you think they're making a good point here. Of course, yeah. You
kids can't fix
you
your
shouldn't
life.
Have a kid to fix your life. It's true.
But
kids are not life sucks.
Well, and you know what? That's unfortunate that people think that. But I also understand, Don, because kids are pretty bratty anymore because their parents aren't together or around. So they have behavioral issues
a lot of the time.
Yeah,
that's true.
So I don't blame for millennials for not wanting to have kids. I don't like a lot of people's kids because they're misbehaved. I like well-behaved kids.
Well, and of course, that is, we should parent better. I mean, yes. Why are your kids so bratty? What are you doing? Get off your phone. Give the kid some discipline, attention. Some attention, some discipline.
Or let them know it's okay to be alone for a little bit.
Yeah, right. Well, and I don't know how far afield we want to get here, but you start digging into that stuff. The reason there's no discipline is because the parent wants the kids to like them. And the reason the parent wants the kids to like them is, frankly, because the parent does not have a spouse or a significant other that actually likes them. And they're looking to fill that hole that should be filled by the spouse with the kid. And it's a disaster. I mean, listen.
They end up oversharing kid. A lot of
issues. If you don't start with, I'm going to save myself for marriage and marry a good person, and then we're going to have children. It's going to be, if you don't start with the natural design for marriage, all of these things snowball on each other. Right. I mean, here we are drugging up all these poor kids now in our culture. Everybody's got ADHD. Everybody's got this. Everybody's got that. Yeah, you know what? Everybody comes from broken homes where they're not feeling loved, too. I mean, Right. Come on. That's the bigger issue.
And that's what the statistics show over and over again. Children who come from divorced and even remarried homes, their tendency towards ADD, ADHD, depression, anxiety, suicide, difficult relationships with parents, difficult friendships, sex outside of marriage, all of it, or poor performance in school, all of those risks and poor behaviors increase when there's separation between the parents.
Not only increase, but it's exponential. I mean, that's the main factor. If you want to just say, what's the main factor between flourishing kids and not flourishing? It's, are you in an intact family with two parents at home?
There. Absolutely. Even struggling families.
Oh, absolutely.
Even, and not saying these marriages are perfect, even the struggling present parents make an incredible difference. Yeah, they need to work through their issues and not need to burden the children so much, but that makes a difference. And so I think continuing to understand the child won't fix anything, it's about growing in so much more. I hope people are seeing there's a joy and beauty to having children that makes you a better person.
Yeah,
not that it's about you, but you being a good person is about other people.
Yeah, it's a love factory. Like, if you approach it properly, like, here is a young child, a life that God has put in my hands to be responsible for, that matures you. It should, at least.
It should. Well, last reason, just a minute or so left. We don't even need a reason. We just don't want them. So stop asking. Millennials don't want kids at times, and that's plain and simple for many of them.
Yeah, the whole pro-choice thing seems to be at play here. What we do with our bodies, careers, and money are personal choices, and no one's required to provide an explanation. And I mean, okay, on one hand, yep. You're right. You're free to do what you want. On the other hand, I think there's an underlying philosophy here that is very dangerous, and that says that there is no inherent meaning to life, that there is no inherent creative reality that you were born into, that if you want to flourish, you should conform to. Instead, you are your own little God, and you can do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter what you do, and whatever choice you make is fine. I think that's actually the philosophy, but that's a very dangerous philosophy.
Well, and I love what you just said, too, talking about the creative element. We as human people are made to create artistically with our hands, with our bodies. That potential for life that is in men and women is a call to participate in the life of God and his creation and forming people to be good people of faith. And there is a truth and beauty to that that demands sacrifice and great love, but that's good.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.